Dormammu, I've come to bargain.
I feel something.
You feel it?
Yes, I feel it.
That's the force.
Do you lay eggs?
What?
No.
Blow that piece of junk out of the sky!
Quite a lot's happened. You and I had a fight recently.
Did I win?
No, I won easily.
I am Groot.
I am Steve Rogers.
Traitor!
Who in the hell do you think you are?
I have spoken.
Hey guys, welcome to WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me tonight is Jack McCarthy.
Howdy, folks. We are 100% Fedra free tonight. We have 100% of the rent and 0% of the sweetness.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Fedra is under the weather. We wish her well and wish her a speedy recovery. And hopefully, you know, she'll be back with us next week.
She makes it sound like she's like terminally ill or something. She's not that sick, folks. She's going to be fine.
Well, dude, I said it to you too when you weren't on the show.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I always say that. I'm just being nice, you know.
I always skip to the news, but okay.
All right. So tonight on the show, what we're going to do is we're going to be reviewing the latest episode of What If, and Jack has indeed watched it. And we're also going to be discussing a lot of news that has dropped recently. But first, I was going to ask Jack. So, Venom 2, are you going to see it?
I will probably go see it. I was kind of on the fence a little bit about it because they, you know, as we've said before, in some of the scenes, it sounds like Venom, it sounds like the Cookie Monster, you know, but it actually looks kind of good from the last trailer. So, you know, Carnage was never my favorite villain in Spider-Man and the Venom books, but, you know, Harrelson. I can't say his name. I don't know. I was going to say Halverson, you know, Harrelson is always a good guy to watch. He's always entertaining because he just has that. You don't know what he's going to do next in nearly every role he plays. So, I'm going to try to get to see it.
No, he's a decent actor for sure. I love him in Cheers. I know that was early on in his life, but he's one of my favorites in Cheers. Him and Frasier are my favorites in that show.
Frasier got much better when he had Lilith.
Yeah, it kind of sucked because I watched Cheers and I watched Frasier again, and I wish they didn't get divorced because they were such a good couple. Because they were so.
I wouldn't say good, but they were good to watch.
Yeah, they were fun to watch. I loved Lilith. I thought she was another one. She would have been my third.
Yeah, because Frasier was always so uptight, and then he meets a woman who's even more uptight than him. You know, so they were fun to watch.
Yeah. But Woody, you know, every now and then he makes a decent movie. I never saw, what was that movie? Oliver Stone, Natural Born Killers. I never seen that one because I heard it was pretty nasty.
I didn't see that one either, but I liked him in Zombie World.
No, Zombieland.
Zombieland, when it was with Michael Cena. I thought he was funny in that.
Michael, no, that wasn't Michael Cena. It reminds you of him. It's
wasn't that
Jesse Eisenberg?
Oh yes, that's right. Well, they both have that. Like
they do. I got them confused in that movie too.
Can you imagine if they swapped had Michael Cena as Lex Luthor instead of Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to see that. But I'll tell you what, if you go see it, I really wasn't planning on seeing it, but if you see it, I'll go see it so we can kind of review it.
Didn't like the first one that much.
No, I didn't. You know, like I said, my problem is it's just not the Venom from the Spider-Man comics. And although it's better than Topher Grace's Venom, you know, like the look of it, the CGI still doesn't look that good to me. Like when I was watching the first one, you can definitely tell it was all CGI. Venom's hard to do. And I think if you're going to do him right, unfortunately, you know, they need a bigger budget. And I think they spent a lot of money on Tom Hardy. And I don't know. I just didn't think he looked, it's just very fake to me.
It's kind of rough because the character himself, if they try to make him, he's got to look very oily. Like Venom, he's like that liquid alien goo. He shouldn't be like a flat color, you know, which would probably give them more to work with as a CGI. That they could add details would stand out, but he's supposed to be kind of like wet, gooey looking, and it's a reflective surface. So I could see how it would be very hard to get that right. I thought he looked pretty good, but then again, all I had was Spider-Man 3 to compare him to. And I thought that was a complete miss for Venom.
Yeah. Well, that probably helped it.
Yeah.
Just
because I wonder when they're going to put the white S on him.
The white S?
The white spider.
Okay.
You know how it kind of loops down.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
I'm just wondering how or when they're going to do that. Because once they do that, then he's really Venom.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. I could forgive all that crap that they've done if they make him really Venom and he's fighting Spider-Man. But again, he's got to be bad. He can't be this goody two shoes Venom character. So hopefully they do it right, but I don't think they will. Like maybe at some point, Eddie Brock will meet Peter Parker. Peter does something to Eddie that pisses him off and he wants revenge against him. But the odds of that happening are very slim.
Yeah, well, they've made Tom Hardy, they've made his Eddie Brock. Isn't the jerk that Eddie Brock was in the comics. You know, Tom Hardy's Eddie Brock, like, not that you'd say like, oh, he's a great guy and everything, but you know what? He's not innately unlikable. And that's what worked with Eddie Brock in the comics. He was always just this big, obnoxious jerk. And I wouldn't want to see them wreck the Sony universe, whatever we're calling the Venom movies. I wouldn't want to see them turn Tom Hardy into a jerk, but I would like to see him fight Spider-Man. And for some reason, you know, maybe the symbiote just has a disliking for Peter Parker and that drives it. I don't know. We'll have to see how they handle it when it comes down to that.
Well, again, it seems like it's a spinoff series and Venom's a little goofy. And I heard he's pretty goofy in this one. I did hear that it's kind of fun. It's better than the first movie. It's more of a buddy movie, you know, with the two of them. So we'll see. It's short, too. I think it's like maybe in less than 90 minutes.
Yeah, so. It's supposed to be very short.
Speaking of long, so No Time to Die, the new James Bond movie that's coming out in the United States next Wednesday, I think. That's almost 3 hours.
What?
Yeah.
Three. Okay. Wow. All right. That's surprising. But I guess maybe they're introducing a lot of stuff in anticipation of rebooting him again. Like maybe we'll get a little bit more background on Moneypenny and Q and Ralph Fiennes, you know, M. As well, new, maybe we'll get, they'll flesh them out. So this way, when the new person comes in, they can kind of carry the load a little.
Well, I'm a huge James Bond fan, and I'm actually a very huge Daniel Craig as James Bond fan. I like him. As James Bond.
I think he's good. I think he's very good.
I started watching his movies again. Casino Royale is great. except now that I play poker a lot more, that last scene when they're playing poker is just such crap because like everybody goes all in at the table. And this one guy, he's like, I got two pair. And the other one is like, I have three of a kind. And someone has a straight. And then he has, I think Bond has a straight flush. I mean, the odds of that happening are basically impossible. I mean, again, now that I play poker so often, it's like, come on. It could have ended differently. But I guess when you're watching the movie and you don't play it that often, you don't give a damn, but whatever. But no, I Casino Royale is my favorite. I think he was really good in it. I watched Quantum of Solace. I just can't get into that movie. I've watched it. It's like my Phantom Menace. I've watched it four or five times and I wanted to like it, but I think it sucks.
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
The plot just isn't as, it doesn't have as strong of a hook as some of the other ones.
It's a boring villain. The girl is boring. Everybody's boring in it, basically. And it's slow. It drags. And the plot is ridiculous. It's about water. I just can't like it. I'm going to watch Skyfall next, Spectre. There were things I liked about Spectre. I know a lot of people think Spectre's the worst one out of the Daniel Craig ones.
I was not a big fan of it. I mean, I was kind of watching it. I'm like, okay, this isn't too bad. This isn't too bad. But once they're like, you know, Dad, like you, his adopted son better. Like, I was like, no, they didn't go that route, did they? And it's like, it goes on like, yes, they did. Like, and I like, what's his name, who played, well.
Christoph Waltz.
Christoph Waltz is just, he's great. I loved him in the Quentin Tarantino movies.
Yeah, he was really good.
He's just so damn good. And he makes the perfect Bond villain. But once again, they just didn't give him the right stuff to work with.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's the whole thing with that movie. When I was watching it, I was like, didn't anybody that was filming this movie ever see Austin Powers Goldmember? Because it's basically the same plot, you know, where Dr. Yeah, Evil right. And Austin Powers brother. Are brothers separated at birth. Yeah, that was so lame. It's again, whoever thought up that idea should have been canned. It was just so dumb.
Yeah, I think Skyfall is my favorite out of all the Daniel Craig Bond movies, though. That one was, I think that one was just nearly perfect. You had a great villain. You had some great action sequences. The whole bit with the house at the end in the Highlands. I mean, that was just my favorite of them.
And no, I like that one.
Notes where the Alfa Romeo is there, you know, and he takes it out and, you know, he really gets mad when they blow up his car.
No, it's not the Alfa Romeo. Now I got a brain fart. What the hell is it? I know people are listening. I like, it's this. How can you guys be so dumb?
Austin Martin. I'm sorry. Austin Martin. That's right.
At least I remembered.
There you go. Minutes. You got me on that.
Few seconds.
Well, you know, they didn't make a Marvel comic of James Bond. So
actually, they did.
They did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember. Well, I'm not going to get into it, but it was more of Sean Connery's James Bond. I remember it, but it was like a one shot deal. But I always loved that stuff. I as a kid, I used to eat up old James Bond stuff. But this new one, though, I'm going to go in with an open mind, but I have a feeling that I might be a little disappointed. They're going down a certain path that most movies I don't like go down, and we'll see what happens. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I know what happens. I read the spoilers.
You always check out the spoilers.
I couldn't wait anymore.
I think that's your downfall in going to movies.
Well, what was the movie that came out recently? Well, no, Black Widow. I didn't look at the spoilers. Shang-Chi. I didn't look at the spoilers. Well, part of it because I wasn't really interested in those movies. But yeah, James Bond, I'm interested in because I'm a big fan of it. But from what I read, I'm not going to reveal anything, but the plot sounds really silly. And yeah, there's a couple of things that happen that I know a lot of people aren't going to like. I'll just leave it there.
Leave it there because I always try to go in with an open mind. So,
yeah. But speaking of No Time to Die, I was reading the there's either the Mirror or the Sun. And this article said James Bond's No Time to Die sparks calls to ban movie villains with disfigurements. So a campaigner has called for an end to the use of villains with disfigurements in movies. Now, this is a charity and, you know, it's a nice charity. It's Changing Faces. It's a UK charity that campaigns to end discrimination against people with visible differences. So they basically wrote to the producers of James Bond films and saying, you guys need to stop this.
But they've always kind of had weird people. Like even back in, what's it with the Sean Connery days when?
Oh yeah, that's the point.
The little tiny midget guy tattoo from Fantasy Island. He was like,
you can't say midget anymore.
Okay.
Little person.
High impaired person. You know, like he was hiding in like the overhead compartment on the train. You had the guy in the Pierce Brosnan.
Blofeld.
With the diamonds scraped all through his face. Weird looking villains and people.
No, they do. Yeah, I mean, and Blofeld was the big one. Like he had this scar in his face and he was bald. And he appeared in a lot of James Bond movies. It's like society just bowing to whoever has a problem with, you know, something that they have to change it, which is kind of a little ridiculous. It's and even like
Casino Royale, the guy who cried blood. Like they always have something freaky.
No, they do. I mean, almost every James Bond villain has got some sort of weird scar or a third nipple.
Or you have an 8-foot-tall guy with big metal teeth, you know?
Yeah. It's just, I mean, I personally, like when I see these James Bond movies, and I'm sure you do too, you don't, if you see somebody that's disfigured or, you know, they had a, you know, something that they were born with, you don't know, automatically think of them as a villain. You know, you have sympathy for them.
Not in James Bond. James Bond is just total fantasy. Every good guy is cool, suave, sophisticated. And like, he usually has a goofy sidekick. Like in the Pierce Brosnan, they had the former Russian general who was always kind of, yeah, he was this, you know, Russian mob guy, but he was always kind of funny. Or they had the U.S. general who always seemed to be one step ahead of him, but like was a good old boy. You know, you had those people, but every woman is drop dead gorgeous. Like I said, every spy is stylized to be handsome and suave. All the guys in a lab are nerdy. I mean, it's they're all caricatures, and you can't try to apply it. The villains are usually freaky looking, and there's always something broken about them. I can't see sympathy. I can never feel sympathy.
No, no, I'm saying sympathy towards 006. Suppose you see a child that has disfigurement. But you see,
that's real life.
Yeah.
In a James Bond movie, you've got that's when you go see James Bond, you're not really looking to sympathize with the characters.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay.
No, my point is that I was trying to make is that when you see a kid that has a disfigurement or an adult that has a disfigurement, you're not like, oh, stay away from me. He's going to grow up to be a villain. You have sympathy for them.
Of course not.
Yeah. But that's why I think that they're over exaggerating like a lot of things, like what they do. Like, again, like with Gone with the Wind, they're like, some people are like, well, it should be banned because it's about slavery and it's not very nice or whatever. But again, just because you don't like it doesn't mean that other people don't like it as a movie. And I say so many times to people, if you've never seen the movie, you should watch it, although it's 4 hours long. Scarlett O'Hara is one of the most awe-inspiring women. And she's an early example of a powerful woman. And it's her story. And that's what I think a lot of people are missing by not watching the movie. And the same thing with Melanie, who was her sister-in-law, who was another powerful woman. I'm not going to get into that movie, but I really do like it. And I think that it represents women very well in it. Anyway.
It's a period piece. That's what people keep forgetting. You don't have characters like that in movies set in today. But when this was written as a book and then made into a movie, it's a period piece. That's what went on at that time. You can't apply today's, let's just call it enlightened opinions, go back and alter that, or you're ruining the art of that movie. And in some movies, it is cinematic art. And Gone with the Wind is one of those movies. And you watch it for what it is. You might say, oh, it's terrible how this person acted or how this person was treated. But you got to look at when it was made and what time period it's supposed to happen in. I mean, you don't look at Quentin Tarantino's Django and say, oh my God, that's terrible what they did. This movie should be canceled. No, you can't do that. Watch the movie. If you don't like the movie, change the channel. Watch something else. But the movie is what the movie is. You shouldn't be going back and, canceling it.
I watched Django recently. It is brutal what they do to the slaves in that movie.
All these movies are.
Yeah, but that's pretty nasty, what they do. But the thing with Django is he really was a superhero, for that time. Well, yeah, again, it's fiction, but that's the whole thing is that, he's the hero of the movie and he comes out on top. And, that's why part of what draws us to it is that we want to see all the villains get their comeuppance. And
you want to see him get his wife back.
Yeah.
You're rooting for him. He's had a terrible time and deals with terrible people and horrible things happen along the way, but you're rooting for him to, find his wife, get back together with her,
Was her name Broomhilda? I always say Hilda because of that comic. is it Broomhild?
Well, Broomhild is the Valkyrie, but...
Well, that's what she was
named. I don't remember what her name was in the movie.
No, it was. It was Broomhild. Because the whole thing is Christoph Waltz's character made it like he wanted to speak to a slave that could speak German, his native language. And she actually had a mistress, I guess, that had owned her previously that taught her German so that she could talk to her daughter or whatever. Anyway, getting too deep into all this stuff.
But Django is a good movie. Watch it, folks.
No, it is. Django is an awesome movie. I love all Quentin Tarantino movies. They're like the Marvel movies. It's like there's not a bad one. It's just some are not as good as others. But those are even hard to find. Because, again, it's like the one that I I didn't watch the most was Jackie Brown. And I've been watching that a lot lately. And it's starting to go up and up every time I see it. Because again, what's great about him is the dialogue that he creates for his characters and the actors that he gets the most out of his actors too. But yeah, I think that's a very underrated film, Jackie Brown. I love that one. But my favorite's Pulp Fiction. Anyway.
No, my favorite's Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, no, I like Inglourious Basterds.
That is just... That is just so good. I mean, the way how he normally breaks his movies into chapters, but the way he did it with that, where the same characters start showing up and intertwining, to me, that's just my favorite one. That opening scene where he's in the house and they're hiding the family under the house. Like, oh my God, what? Just... And Christopher Waltz is, he's just born to play a villain, I think.
I mean, I remember when I saw that in the movies for the first time, I was sweating like during that scene. It's so intense and it's just two men talking. And there's mostly speaking in German, I think, in the beginning. And it's just so well done. It's two guys across from each other at a table. And that's what a lot of directors just don't get anymore. They have to have all these different angles and, you know, something has to be blowing up every couple of minutes. He does a good job when people are saying dialogue. And then he does a good job when somebody's saying absolutely nothing at all. And you're just looking at that person and you can tell what they're thinking.
Oh, exactly. When Christopher Waltz is sitting there and he's having a completely evil conversation and the other guy is just getting ready to break down altogether. And he's just so casually going on like, oh, this is great milk. You know, perfect. You know, and he's talking about these horrible things. So they're everyday occurrences. It just shows the innate evil in him as a villain. I mean, and the poor guy he's talking to, like I said, you see him, he starts breaking down, he starts sweating. And you're right, it's just two guys in a room talking for nearly all of that. And it was just such a good, it was just so well done.
Yeah, no, it was. Love Quentin Tarantino. All right, let's get into the news. So this is breaking news, Jack.
Breaking news? I haven't gotten to look at the internet at all today. This is the first time I've been on the computer since yesterday afternoon for like 10 minutes before my son needed it, but
all right. Okay. Well, this is big. Scarlett Johansson and Disney have agreed to a settlement.
Oh,
so they made friends. Scarlett released a statement and she said, "I am happy to have resolved our differences with Disney. I'm incredibly proud of the work we've done together over the years and have greatly enjoyed my creative relationship with the team. I look forward to continuing our collaboration in years to come." And then the head of Disney Studios, Alan Bergman, said, "I'm very pleased that we have been able to come to a mutual agreement with Scarlett regarding Black Widow. We appreciate her contributions to the Marvel Cinematic Universe and look forward to working together on a number of upcoming projects, including Disney's Tower of Terror." So.
All right. Good. I'm glad they were able to work it out.
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a little disappointed because I feel like... she got her way.
Oh, well, maybe she was due her way.
Well, you know, it is. No, I think that, again, the next story that we're going to talk about is Disney is afraid of all these pending lawsuits that could be happening when it comes to Marvel.
Yeah, but I mean, Disney is such a megacorp. They wouldn't have settled with her unless there was some validity to what she was saying. So
no,
that's amazing. Because Disney Disney is so big and they have such resources. They could literally go out and nearly crush anyone. That's,
no, I don't believe in that. I mean, it could be true, but my point is, I think that they settled because they don't want to look like the bad guy. They could have been right, but it's like, you know what? Let's just settle. We'll make friends and her fans will now like us again. And we'll look like the good guy and we'll hire her for a couple of movies. And that's it. I mean, that's how I see it. I guess I'm a pessimist when I look at it, but yeah, I mean, look, we've discussed this back and forth. She has a point in a way, but again, we never saw the exact contract for the movie, like what it entailed. Was it supposed to be a specific theatrical release, or did Disney have the right to air it on Disney Plus?
Oh, I don't think we'd ever get to see it. I think that's held in the legal file somewhere that we would probably never get to see it.
Well, I'm sure now that this has happened, it created precedent that from now on, they're going to include that in all of their Starz contracts. If for some chance, some pandemic or some alien invasion or whatever, and we cannot release your movie in a theater, we can release it to streaming, something like that to put in the contract. Because they did it with Emma Stone, with Cruella. Like, they kind of settled with her too. They're like, hey, you know what? Let's make a Cruella too. And I think that they settled that because they knew they were in an uphill battle with Scarlett. So they're like, well, let's just try to get, you know, the ones that we released on Disney Plus. I wonder what they're going to do with Mulan, you know, if they're even going to reach out to that girl that played Mulan or the cast or the director.
I'm sure her agent is, you know, going through and looking at everything.
Yeah.
Well, good for them. I'm glad they made peace.
I guess so. I don't know. I hope they don't bring her back from the dead. She's done as far as concerned.
I think if she comes back, it'll be in another, you know, previously in the Black Widow's life, you know, if that's their foray into the spy movie, a James Bond type movie, they can just go back in time wherever they need to. You know, it's just what they can do. The toughest thing is
she's getting old.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out how to say tactfully.
I don't care.
Having her continue to look younger if you're setting these movies further back in time. This Black Widow, this took place between Civil War and Infinity War. Okay, so that's not too long ago, but like I said, you really can't go forward from Infinity War. So you kind of have to probably go backwards now. And like I said, it's that difficulty of, like in Star Trek, how Brett's...
Well, actually, you can, because she was alive in Infinity War, and 5 years passed between Infinity War and Endgame. Oh, no, she died in Infinity War. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No. She died in Endgame.
She was alive in Infinity War.
No, she died in Endgame. So, yeah, so you can take...
She went to the planet in that 5 years. You're right. You have the five-year time period. Yeah. So you can sort of, you know... Because she was busy working, you know, working as trying to keep the world's problems in check. So she could have gone off on a mission during that time period.
Yeah, and there was a lot of crime. I mean, you look at like the streets and everything.
Yeah, so I mean, it could have been something like that. But like I said, it's going backwards. And I know they can digitally modify to make her look, you know, let's say Endgame was how many, 2 years ago?
2019.
Okay, 2 years ago. Figure 3 years to make a movie, so make her look 5 years. No, 5 years plus the 5 years that they covered in the movie. They make her look 10 years younger, like she looked in Iron Man 2 or something. So, or the first Avengers. So, you know, they can digitally work with that, but then, you know, they have mixed effects with that. Sometimes it looks good, sometimes it doesn't. So,
well, we'll see. I hope they don't do that, but you never know. Now that they're buddy buddy, I have a feeling she's going to be in a lot of their movies.
She's better than some people they have in their stable. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, it's true. So this happened just as we were recording, just as we were about to record last week, and I didn't mention it because we had a lot of things to go over. But did you hear the whole thing with Chris Pratt being cast to voice Mario in like a Super Mario movie? Or
yeah, I heard that. Why, people have a problem with him, or is he?
Oh yeah.
Are they picking on him because his Italian accent is not so good?
Well, I don't know where you've been. You probably don't follow the news like I do, but there are a lot of people that don't like Chris Pratt, and they want him canceled, and it's ridiculous. Which made me laugh when this casting came out. I have a feeling Taylor probably screamed like that girl that screamed that dropped her knees when Trump was inaugurated with the little hat on. Because he loves Mario. I think that's his favorite character. Either it's Mario or it's Sonic. And he hates Chris Pratt. He does not like him.
I think Sonic is his favorite more than Mario. But okay.
I don't know. It's one of those two. They're interchangeable, I think. But
one's a hedgehog and one's an Italian plumber.
No, but he likes them both a lot.
Oh, okay.
No, but I know he just doesn't like Chris Pratt because a lot of, I hate using this word, a lot of the woke people don't like him because he's a Christian and he goes to this church, and apparently this church had some anti-LGBTQ things that they said in the past.
Oh, that's it. Cancel him. Oh, wait.
Well, that's one.
Never mind.
No, and he said that my church is open to everybody, you know, no matter what their faith is or what they believe in, you know, we don't hate. Wasn't good enough for them. So during the election recently, I think that all the Avengers and a lot of people from Marvel got together to kind of help Joe Biden. And they were trying to do some sort of benefit where they all got together and he wasn't there. So they naturally assumed that he was a Trump supporter. He's never come out. This is the whole thing. He's never come out and said his politics, but it's fairly obvious. He's probably conservative. He likes to hunt. You know, he likes to go to church. You know, he supports our troops. He's very patriotic. And a lot of people, the woke people, just don't like that. They think that that's anti-American, everything that I just mentioned, and they want to see him gone. And for him to be voicing Mario, the internet went crazy. They were just so upset. That was one thing that they were saying that you mentioned. He's not Italian. You know, it's like it's racist to cast him as.
Yeah, and, I hear where you're going with this.
And they're like, they were questioning, has he ever played a Mario game before? How do we know that? And he said that Mario is one of his favorite characters, but they're like, but do we have proof that he's ever played a Mario game before? Nobody wants him. This group of people do not want him to be Mario. The only thing I will say, you know, as far as me, what I think of the casting, I wouldn't have cast him. I would have cast the voice actor that's been doing Mario forever. He's still alive. He still does the voice. If it's an animated movie, just cast him. But I guess they're going with celebrities.
Wait a second. The same people are complaining were they jumping over? Who was it? Bob Costas?
Bob Costas.
No, from Roger Rabbit. What was his name?
Oh, Bob Hoskins?
Bob Hopkins. Didn't he play Mario the first time around?
Yeah, but that was the 80s.
Yeah, people... but still. And no one, you know, no one says, oh, you know what? We should cancel that movie, too, because, you know, they had an English guy playing Mario.
Because the people that love to complain weren't born yet. That's the problem.
Yeah, but, you know, they go back. They're screaming about Gone with the Wind from 1940s.
Well,
you know,
screaming. It's just, they were probably screaming in their mother's womb, like when Super Mario's came out. I never saw that movie because it looked like crap. And I heard it was crap too.
Oh, but there's some people who love it.
Me?
But then again, there's some people who love Howard the Duck, and that, I thought that was unwatchable.
Oh, if Charlie's listening, he's not going to be happy.
Sorry, Charlie.
He loves Howard the Duck. You know, it's weird. I never got into Mario. I never played a Mario game other than Donkey Kong.
Really? Oh, I love Mario Kart. We don't fire up the Wii that often anymore, but when we do, it's Mario Kart all the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fun game. Great game.
I was more of a Genesis guy, but I didn't play Sonic either.
Well, you like the fighting games.
Yeah, I like the fighting game, the sports games, first-person shooters and all that.
Finish him!
But there were a couple of other people that were cast that I didn't know everybody. People are screaming about Charlie Day as Luigi. Do you know what Charlie Day is?
What was he in?
That TV show, Sunny in Philadelphia, Danny DeVito. I never seen that one.
I couldn't get into it. I remember Danny DeVito from it. I can't tell you who else was in it.
But what's funny is that they're saying, well, that's excellent casting. He's not Italian. Luigi's Italian, too.
Yeah.
The other casting, again, I'm just picking out the people that I knew. The other people I just didn't even mention. Jack Black is voicing Bowser.
Okay.
I don't know about that. I would think he'd have to have a really deep voice and he shouldn't be funny. And Seth Rogen is voicing Donkey Kong.
Wait, Donkey Kong is in this movie?
Yeah. Donkey Kong shouldn't talk. You know?
No, he shouldn't, but like, yeah, Taylor's the guy on this, but I always thought Donkey Kong had Mario, you know, as the little guy in the game.
Yeah.
But then they went off and they started making Donkey Kong games and then Mario games separate. And I thought, I don't remember them ever coming back together after.
Well, they didn't, but they're part of the Nintendo universe.
Yeah, but so's Link.
Well, maybe he'll show up for a
while. I don't know. Who knows?
Anyway.
Won't go see because I'm not that big of a video game Nintendo.
Yeah, this sounds like the Lego movie. It's like, I didn't want to see that one either. So if this comes out on streaming, maybe I'll see it, but I'm not going to be waiting in line to see it when it comes out.
But if Batman's in it, you got to see it. He's the best Batman ever.
So they announced that the Book of Boba Fett is going to be premiering on Disney Plus on December 29th.
Yeah, they're squeezing a lot of these shows in at the at the end of the year just to get it out in 2021. Because there's something, what is starting on like December 30th? Oh, Cobra Kai is starting on New Year's Eve. That's when they're dropping that.
Well, again, well, they're pushing Hawkeye out, too. That's coming out pretty soon.
Well, Hawkeye, are they going to try to go before Christmas on that one since it's a Christmas series?
Well, it looks like it's a Christmas series.
It's going to be a Christmas show.
Well, that's the only part I'm looking forward to, because it just seems weird, you know, kind of like something Die Hard. But well, I'm not really looking forward to it. I'm not looking.
You made a good comparison. This could be Marvel doing Die Hard.
Could be. I'm not really looking forward to the Book of Boba Fett. It's, I mean, Boba Fett was good in The Mandalorian. I like what he did. And I think he needed some character development, because I think he was probably like the biggest overrated character in Star Wars history that really nobody knew anything about him. So it was kind of cool to bring him in, and he was kick-ass cool in The Mandalorian too. Mm-hmm. But he probably, in a way, needs a series so that maybe we get to learn more about him, but I'm really not interested in it at all.
Well, The Mandalorian did a heck of a lot more for Boba Fett than the Star Wars movies ever did. Because they did. They gave him much more character. You actually got to know him a little bit better. You know, the fact that, you know, he was going back after his armor, and then when he got it, how he fixed it up and he went and got a ship. It gave him a little bit more as a character versus a prop, which is basically kind of what I think he almost was. However, while I'm looking forward to the Book of Boba Fett, it kind of puts me in the same position as the Clone Wars. The main character is someone who's a bad guy. He's not, I don't know if you want to put him outright as villain, but he's not a good guy. He's not really someone you can root for because of what he does. So I'll be curious. I'll watch it just because, you know, it's Star Wars and you want to keep up with things. But I'm not sure how it's going to go. So,
oh yeah, we don't know if he redeemed himself or if he's going to be just
took over Jabba's empire. That's not something a Boy Scout would do.
Well, he can be a good leader. He could be a worse leader. So we'll see.
I just can't see a benevolent leader of a crime organization, but you know, we'll see. I'm much more excited about the prospect of the Ahsoka series.
Yeah, I think I'd be more interested in that too. She looks really good.
Oh, you know what looks great? Diamond, who took over Gentle Giant, has put up a Ahsoka Katana mini bust from their bust line.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, this thing is beautiful. I mean, it looks just like her. It's got a cool pose. She's got the two lightsabers. It looks really good. And she has the two white, or as they say, silver sometimes, bladed lightsabers in it. This bust looks very cool. And I think I may have to pre-order that one soon.
Is that modeled after Rosario Dawson or Ashley Eckstein?
It kind of looks like Rosario Dawson, but I don't think it looks too much like her. You know how they always get kind of funny with making the likeness too close to the actor because they have to pay him royalties or something. But I mean, you look at this and you know right off the bat, this is a good depiction of Ahsoka. It doesn't look like the CGI. It looks like a real life sculpture.
I'll look for it later.
Yeah, look for it. It really looks good.
Speaking of looking for things, I should have sent this to you. I don't know if you saw this. Alex Ross, who's like one of my favorite artists. Mm-hmm. He drew a sketch of Danny DeVito as Wolverine recently.
Oh, yes, I saw that. That was funny.
It's funny, but it's scary too. I mean, I hope that there's not a campaign to make Danny DeVito Wolverine?
You know what? I don't think you have to worry about that.
No, he's too old.
Danny DeVito has played so many different roles that I'm sure the Woken Nutty would just freak out if he was supposed to be Wolverine.
Yeah, recently I've been watching a lot of Taxi. He was great. He was that whole show.
Taxi was really a good show for its time. It's up there. It's really good because Louis, was that his name?
Yeah, Louis De Palma.
Louis De Palma. You know, he was so... He was almost like Archie Bunker. He was just so opinionated in the wrong ways that I don't think you could put a character like that on TV today. But he was great.
he was great. Every time he's on that show, he's hysterical. Also, Laka is very funny. And
yeah, Andy Kaufman. Yep. And his wife.
Simca.
He was hysterical.
And Reverend Jim, he was really good too. Everybody else was
that bit of what does a yellow light mean?
Slow yeah.
What does that always sticks in me? I sometimes dude. When I'm driving, it still pops in my head.
But I wouldn't want to see, but you know, it was funny as I was watching Taxi, I was like, man, Danny DeVito is really short. I never realized how short he is.
Oh, yeah.
No, I knew he was short, but I was like, is he considered a little person, like a dwarf? And so I looked it up. So he's 4'10", and he actually is the maximum that you can be as a dwarf. So he is a dwarf. Just made it. What are you huffing about?
Sure. I use the M word and you're like, boom, Jack, you can't say that. I don't think.
Oh, yeah, I didn't use the M word either. No, dwarf you could use.
Hi-ho.
I got to give you a list of words that you can use according to the things that I've read on the internet. But yeah, you could still use the word dwarf.
Now, but I thought the difference was it has to do with the proportions of, you know, the body. I thought that was the difference what set a dwarf from the M word that I'm not allowed to say anymore. You know, like Peter
Dinklage.
Like he has the dwarf proportions. Danny DeVito, I think, is a little bit more proportioned like a I am going to bury myself. Never mind. Let's just go on. What's the next story, Joe? What do you got?
He's like the Shaq of dwarves, Danny DeVito. He's at the very high level. But no, I was just curious about that. So I thought that was kind of interesting. No, actually, that's it. That's the end of the news.
That's the end of the news. Okay.
All right. So let's get into our main topic, and that is the most recent episode of What If, which is called What If Ultron Won. What'd you think?
This was probably the best representation of Ultron that we've seen in the MCU. Because Ultron's supposed to be scary. He's not supposed to be like overly jokey like James Spader had him. He's supposed to be scary of, you know, wiping out all life. And what I did like was they used the Ultron design from a version of Ultron where they had one of those big cosmic crossovers that you have Ultron with the numerous red eyes coming down. And the red cape, because that version of Ultron actually looks pretty scarier than the initial one, which is pretty scary to start with. But at least Ultron came across as, you know, just this crazy robot out to destroy all life, which is what he is, but he just seemed much more menacing in this than he did in Avengers 2. And it was okay. I had a couple of problems with the episode. I don't think the Watcher is a kind of getting to the punching kind of fight type of guy.
Well, yeah, you know how I feel about Jeffrey Wright as the Watcher. I think he's horrible. And,
But no, it's not him. I mean,
no, it is partly him, but it's also the writers.
It's more the writing. Exactly. There's a couple of problems where the Watcher, if it came down to, you know, blasting energy back and forth at each other, that's more of the Watcher. The Watcher really doesn't get into fisticuffs with people, you know, in anything that I read of him. Whenever he's gotten involved, it's like blasting each other with energy until somebody gets disintegrated. But the other big problem is they don't really know how the Infinity Stones are supposed to work. The Infinity Stones are only active within their own reality. If you start pulling them and going into the multiverse, not alternate timelines, they're not supposed to work. And that's what kept, you know, blaring out at me, that Ultron is able to start skipping realities. And, you know, if you take that out of the equation, then, you know, this was probably the best episode of it I've seen so far, but I don't think it was great, but it was the best episode of What If yet so far. What do you think?
I really loved the beginning. I thought the beginning was really, really good. And I was excited because I thought we were going to finally have a really good episode, but I was kind of disappointed. There were a couple of things I didn't like. Like I said, the Watcher, when he said, "What the hell is this?" Would the Watcher say something?
Exactly.
Would he ever say something like that?
No, he would just, in the comics, he would look maybe surprised and, you know, not say anything. He was very vocal. But maybe because in this episode, he started getting smacked around. The Watcher usually doesn't get smacked around.
No, he's like that in every episode, though. He talks too much. He got too involved in this one, too. Again, he's supposed to be the Watcher. You know, like when he's in that, when they're looking for the files. And he goes, It's right next to you. It's like, why are you so emotional? He should be like Mr. Spock. That's how he should be voiced. Where he
usually is. That's a good analogy. He's like that in the comics. He's not an excitable sort of guy. He's there to watch, expressionless, because if he gives an expression, he might, by just them seeing him give an expression, he might affect the outcome of what's going to happen going forward. So he shows up there to watch.
He's supposed to be neutral.
Yeah. But when he shows up, like, the heroes are like, oh geez, so this is bad. This is worse than we thought it was, you know, because he only shows up at pivotal cataclysmic occurrences, you know, so he can observe. And all the heroes know that, all the villains know that, like, okay, let's kind of reevaluate what we're doing here before it really gets bad. So you're right. What the hell is this? Or no, you're so close, just a little bit to the left, the next file. Yeah. That's not really the Watcher.
Well, I think it's either it's the writers, they don't know how to write the Watcher. It's the voice cast that they're not projecting how he should be voiced, or it's Jeffrey Wright, that he's ad-libbing and that they're letting him get away with it. And part of me,
I don't think they would let him get away with ad-libbing. He's not a Robin Williams that Disney said, you know, just do whatever you want with the genie and we'll work it out. I think this is how it was written, and I don't have a problem with them like you do, but I think it's the writing, the material. And once again, this whole, I think the show's been badly written all along, and that's just par for course.
I had a problem with Black Widow. I felt like she was overpowered. Like when she's being chased by Ultron's robots and all that, and she's just on a motorcycle. I mean, I could understand if she was to be able to behave that way if she had the super soldier serum in her, but she was a little too good. She was a little too perfect. That's my biggest complaint with what they do with these, with What If, is that they make their heroes too perfect, and or they make their villains too perfect, like Killmonger. You know, they have to have flaws, and they have to make mistakes, and for some reason they just don't like doing that.
Well, I thought you mentioned the motorcycle thing. When she, like, Hawkeye's about to be killed and she comes sailing out with the motorcycle, and, you know, the two Ultron bots are like standing over Hawkeye ready to kill him. And she comes down with the motorcycle. All I kept thinking is like, oh my God, didn't she just crush Hawkeye with the motorcycle and taking out those robots? Like, from an action perspective, it didn't quite make all that much sense, because she would have crushed him along with the two robots from where they were standing and how she was landing that motorcycle. So I get what you mean. It's a little bit too much, but once again, it's the writing.
And they were the only two humans left on Earth, right? At one point.
That's what kind of made it sound like.
So to me, it seemed like she was having way too much fun. Like she was joking around. And I mean, Hawkeye was miserable, but it's just was really kind of odd for her to be kidding around during that time looking for the files.
Well, the joke of, can I give you a hand? That seemed like the kind of joke she would make from what we've seen in the MCU. The bit in the file room, that was out of character, I thought as well.
And I didn't like, again, was that Cap Shield or was that the...
The Crimson... Red Guardian Shield.
Red Guardian. I didn't like that she was able to throw that around like Cap did. That's what kind of bothers me again. Like, I feel like you're losing the significance of who Steve Rogers was. The shield had certain characteristics to it that it could, you know, shift different angles based on how you threw it, but you had to know how to throw it. And, you know, Cap had the experience. He had the agility. Not everybody could pick up that shield and just start throwing it around, you know, even
right.
like Sam Wilson.
That's kind of what I had the problem with also when they did that little training montage. Like you said, Steve Rogers had the agility to do that. And not everybody can pick up that shield and do what he does. Anybody can use it to protect themselves, to block bullets. But yeah, to be throwing it and bouncing it off things and having it still return to their hand, that's a Steve Rogers move. That's not something other people should be doing.
Yeah, and that was my complaint, because I really feel like it is making him like more insignificant, that if anybody could do what he does, we don't really need him anymore.
I don't think it's a matter of reflecting on Cap. It's once again building up everybody else to be closer to him. I don't think it's as much of a point of saying that Cap is less impressive because he can do this. it's like more like them saying, oh yeah, you know what? She's just as good as he is, you know. He's just as good as Steve Rogers. Look, he can throw the shield just as well. And like, no, that's
That is what bothers me.
Yeah, that kind of bugs me too. That
yay,
not everybody can throw that shield around like that. We agree. Oh my God.
Vision. So, I mean, it really wasn't Vision, you know, it was the body that they used for Vision, and then Ultron was able to get his essence into that body.
Mm-hmm.
What that reminded me is how much Vision sucks in the MCU. He was so good in Civil War. It was Ultron. He was really good in Ultron, Vision. I liked him. And then they just ruined him, you know, just giving him this whole romance with the Scarlet Witch. It just made him soft. He could have been so good. And I guess that bothered me to see the character, even like what they do at What If, like with the zombie thing. It's like, she is my wife. I can't abandon her. It's like,
no, you know who I think who gets it worse? Thanos.
What do you mean?
Like in the Black Panther one, you know, they turned him into Bar Guy. In this one, you know, he has several of the Infinity Stones. He shows, as soon as he walks out, Vision looks at him and cuts him in half. Like, wait a second. You know, like, come on. You know.
That was kind of funny, though.
That was surprisingly brutal for something they put on Disney Plus, I thought.
Well, there's no blood.
But just the concept of the two halves of the guy, schblock, you know, like.
Well, they did that in The Kingsman, and there was no blood either. The
Kingsman was a rated R movie.
But there was no blood. It just, the guy got split in half and he separated.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of blood coming in, and you saw the red insides and stuff. But The Kingsman was a rated R movie. This is Disney Plus. You know, nothing's supposed to be over PG-13. And
I don't know if that was a rated R movie.
And The Kingsman was rated R.
Hmm.
Are you kidding? The church fight scene?
Yeah, right. I was going to look it up and I'm like, nope, Joe, you're wrong.
No way was that PG-13. You know.
Sorry.
So, like I said, that was surprising. But like Thanos just... The guy who writes this must just hate Thanos, you know, like same thing. Oh, he's infected by the Marvel zombies. Like, I don't think that's the way it would go, but.
Yeah, I forgot about that too. Yeah, that whole What If series does not make him look very good.
No, it doesn't make him look good.
I was glad to see Captain Marvel got her comeuppance. And again, if Brie Larson, if you're listening, my problem with you is I think you look great as Captain Marvel, but I just think you need to smile a little bit. Maybe she needs a boyfriend. You know, she just seems like she's just not happy.
It's funny that you should say that, though, that she needs a boyfriend.
Oh, what?
Don Cheadle needs more work as War Machine. And that's who she had a relationship with in the comics. So let's get some War Machine in Captain Marvel 2. Let's see some Captain Marvel in the War Machine series. So Joe could have a whole new subject to go off on.
That would be the worst couple in existence. Don Cheadle and Brie Larson. But
the two characters, both are from military backgrounds. They would get the sense of duty of what they have to do. You know, country first over relationship. There's a lot of storyline to like.
I'm not saying anything about the comic book characters. They would be a good couple. Brie Larson.
The MCU characters. Rhodey is still an army guy, you know?
I am saying the actors. I'm not talking about the characters.
Yeah, but you couldn't.
She would crush him, first of all.
Decipher them, you know.
I can do whatever Pepper I want.
You hate her because you hate Gwyneth Paltrow, you know?
Well, you know, it was funny because like Eric, you know, was talking to me recently and he saw Iron Man. He started watching the MCU movies again. And I said, yeah, you know, Iron Man was a great movie. I says, but you got to admit Gwyneth Paltrow is not a good Pepper. And in that first movie, she was good. Like when she had the glasses, to me, when I remember Pepper, and again, it was a long time ago, Pepper, you know, was kind of nerdy. Like she had red hair, she had glasses. She was like basically Tony's secretary and he didn't treat her very nice, but she grew throughout the years, like where she got more confidence. You know, she rose in her levels and all that.
Well, you got to take into account the sign of the times. I mean, she was Tony's secretary during the 1960s, and that's how women were written as the secretary. Even Carol Danvers was, oh, gee, Marvel, I'm here to help you out. I'm your attaché slash assistant, you know, and it was, you know, Carol, coffee, black. That's just the way it was written. But Pepper came into her own, but I just always remember her with Happy. I never remembered her with Tony Stark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She was with Happy?
I remember her being with Happy, and
that'd be funny.
You know, so she was really kind of off limit to Tony's harem, I guess you want to call it, because he always had different girls coming in and out. But yeah, she was always, nope, that's my friend's girl. That's it, you know.
I gotta say, again, I was a big Iron Man fan, you know, in the comics. Mostly because I loved his costume. I thought it was cool. The colors, the design, I really liked it. But for me, Tony Stark was pretty boring. There was really nothing to him. Like when I was reading him, I think he probably got better once I stopped reading him. But Robert Downey Jr. did such a good job of not playing him strictly as Tony Stark. You know, kind of throwing in his own self. And I know I complain about that stuff, but he made it work. Like if you do something like that, you have to make it better than the character was. You know, you don't do a lesser character. Like,
well, I think
in the like what Don Cheadle is doing. You gotta admit.
Gotta take a shot at him.
But you gotta admit he's not that good as War Machine.
I like him as War Machine. He doesn't bother me nearly as much as he bothers you. Same way Mark Ruffalo doesn't bother me like he bothers you. But, I mean, it was funny that Robert Downey Jr. did such a good job with Tony Stark that they altered Tony Stark in the comics to be more like Robert Downey Jr. And the same thing with Chris Pratt and Star-Lord. People liked the MCU Star-Lord. So he wasn't like that in the comics beforehand. Star-Lord was a smart guy who always had, you know, a trick up his sleeve, but he was smart. He was a strategist. He didn't just kind of bumble along. And unfortunately, they turned Star-Lord into that guy who just bumbles along after Chris Pratt's portrayal of him. And, you know, I think Tony Stark got more interesting after the movie because he did get a little bit more, I don't know, playful, I guess, maybe a little funnier than he was prior. Because I just remember, like you were saying, he was always very kind of stiff and, you know, a businessman that, you know.
He was kind of like Hugh Hefner.
Well, I think that's
More of a business. But you know,
he was a little too far in some direction.
He was like a playboy. You know,
he was
like
a playboy. But you're right; he really was never that interesting. And I think one of the more interesting things they did was make him an alcoholic. Mm. And now that's like when everybody thinks of Iron Man, they go back to that storyline. But the character is so much more history than the demon in a bottle storyline. And a lot of people think, oh, that should have been in the movie. That doesn't make for a fun movie. That was a very dramatic storyline. We saw in Iron Man 2 that he does have a drinking problem. Yeah. That he does go overboard, but I'm glad they didn't dwell on that, that they kind of...
They didn't need to, because, again, he did a good job at the character.
Yeah, so...
No, I think about it. Like, if they hired somebody else to play Iron Man and he didn't give the performance that Robert Downey Jr. did, I don't know if we'd have the MCU.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think we would. If Iron Man didn't create so much enthusiasm, I don't think we would have seen the MCU. You know, it might be a rare thing, like they get a movie every few years.
Yeah.
The stars align, but we wouldn't have the MCU as it is.
Like, it wouldn't have made the box office that it did. It, potentially, it might not have made as much money. And either Paramount or Disney would have said, yeah, maybe we don't need an Iron Man 2.
Or we would, you know, Iron Man didn't make much money. Why should we bother with Captain America?
Yeah.
Or why should we bother with Thor? I mean, there's no way in heck we would have seen an Ant-Man, a Doctor Strange. We'd probably only see Spider-Man movies.
Or they would have treated it like maybe the Jason Bourne movies or the... I lost my train of thought. I was just thinking that...
No, it would have been a smaller franchise.
Yeah, like a smaller, you know, like where a movie would come out every couple of years, but it wouldn't have been the event that it turned into, like whenever they released Marvel movies. Right. This episode also made me, I'm officially sick of the multiverse. I just don't want it to come. It hasn't even come yet. I'm sick of it, but they keep pushing the multiverse in this. And then when you think about it, not only is Marvel doing this crap, but DC is doing this crap, mm-hmm. and Spider-Man is doing this crap. So,
well, we're Spider-Man stuck is with pulled into it due to the Marvel push.
Well, we don't know 100% for sure if this is going to be the you know, the multiverse, or if it's going to be the Spider-Verse. You know, we'll find out when we see the movie. Could be a little different.
You know what? It would kind of be nice if it was just the Spider-Verse. You're right, that it would be like that thing with Miles Morales' movie. Mm. You're right. You know what? I would almost rather it be that than the MCU multiverse that they're going with.
It seems like it's going to be, though, when you think about it. Because, I mean, they're taking Spider-Man from Tobey Maguire. They're taking Andrew Garfield, we think. I mean, we definitely know they're taking the villains from those movies. So we'll see. You know
what? It would be cool to be able to get some of those villains back into the current Spider-Man franchise. Like, it would be great to see Doc Ock again. It'd be great to see William Dafoe as Norman Osborn again. You know, even though, like, I think you sent us a picture of him, how they did something weird CGI-ish to his face.
No, they didn't do anything CGI-ish, but it just seemed like he had the Goblin costume on, but he didn't have his mask on.
Oh, I just remember his face. It's like, don't they do William Dafoe there? He looks weird, but, you know, we'll see when it comes out, but... like I said, I would love to see those actors brought in to the current Spider-Man series.
Well, it's happening.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, not as a one-off, like, you know, Tobey Maguire takes out William Dafoe and they fall into their own universe. And I don't know, they pull Al Molino in with them, you know. I don't know what we're going to see, but I would love to see those versions of the villains in the MCU Spider-Man verse with better character. Well, Doc Ock's character design is pretty good.
Yeah.
But I mean, they'd have to definitely make the Green Goblin less Power Ranger-y.
Yeah. Yeah, you might be happy. I mean, I know a little bit more about the movie than you do.
I'm sure you hit those pages.
Yeah. Yeah, just like I did James Bond. Yeah, but I've heard that for a while, though. I mean, like at least 2 years ago. And it was just a big rumor, and we don't know if it's true. Like, I remember reading, like, all these rumors again, like with the Black Panther, that they were going to bring the Submariner and Dr. Doom into the Black Panther sequel. I don't know if that's true or not. Sounds like Submariner or his cousin is going to be in it. I don't know if Dr. Doom is going to be in it. I think that'd be a weird place to have Dr. Doom show up.
It would. If they're going to bring Doom in, they got to bring him in with the FF.
Yeah. But at that point too, like this thing that I was reading, they said that what's going to happen is that Norman Osborn is going to be the big bad for the MCU. Like, he is going to be almost like the Thanos of the MCU. You know, like how they had like one big central villain that everybody was kind of drawn to. It could be Norman Osborn. And I guess the other one might be Kang. Like, there'll be Earthbound and then Celestial Bound. And
well, Norman Osborn came out of Secret Invasion in a very strong position in the comics. After Secret Invasion, he was the one who kills the Skrull Queen. And as a result, you know, they're like, well, you know what? Shields didn't do anything, but Norman Osborn did. Let's let him take over Shield. And so you have Norman Osborn running Shield, and it led to the whole Dark Avengers thing that he put the Dark Avengers together. So we've seen hints of the Dark Avengers. Maybe it's Norman Osborn puts them together as a big bad. But you can't put him in the neighborhood of Kang. Kang is...
No, that's not what I mean. I'm just saying that they're going to have two big villains in the MCU, you know, like where Thanos was kind of... He wasn't really shown that much in the MCU, but we knew he was coming and that it was all going to accumulate at some point in an Avengers movie. And I think that that's kind of like what they're going to do potentially with Norman Osborn. But again, this is something I read years ago, even before they were making a Spider-Man movie, that this was the plans that Marvel had, is that they want to somehow work with Sony to bring Norman Osborn into the universe so that he gives a hell of a time to the superheroes on Earth. And then someone like Kang or Galactus would, you know, basically be out in space, you know, dealing with the Guardians and Asgardians, the Guardians and the Asgardians.
Well, how would that work though, considering once again,
that they're gone.
No Way Home is supposed to be the last collaboration between Disney and Sony, that I don't think Sony would just hand off Norman Osborn for the MCU to run with.
I don't think it is. But you know what? All right, let's just finish this really quick. I'm okay. Sorry. What about Doctor Strange? Did you like seeing him again?
What do you mean? In What If?
Yeah. I mean, in this What If.
It makes sense. That's like the last, one of the last places the Watcher could go to hide. This Doctor Strange is crazy more powerful because he basically surrendered so much of his... Well, no, he actually took in so much from these elder beings. A lot of Cthulhu stuff going on. That this Doctor Strange is powerful, but he's also, I think, half crazy in the head. So it makes sense that the Watcher would go there because they know it's so separate, so isolated that Ultron would have a hard time to find him. So I don't have a problem with them. That Doctor Strange, he even has, I don't know, he even the cloak of levitation seems to have transformed where he looks more like Dracula, I think, than Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
But, well, you know, we'll see what happens. It's an interesting take. I mean, this Doctor Strange may have absorbed all that evil and come to terms with it because he took that power in and he still failed with what he was trying to do. So maybe he still has the power, but he's not still crazy. So who knows? We'll see on what next Wednesday.
That's true.
On part two of What If Ultron Won.
All right. So I forgot this big news story. And this was going to be our top news story until the Scarlet thing dropped. But what do you think about Marvel suing the heirs of the original creators of their comic book characters?
That's a long-term messy situation that's been going on for years. I mean, the Kirby estate had been fighting with them for years. Once Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man came out, then the Ditko estate got much more active. It's a tough call because considering how much money's being thrown around, it would be nice if something was shared with the creator's family. If the creators were still alive, I would say they should definitely get something. I don't think it's should be considered as if they were owners of the characters because all these characters were created as work for hire. But if the creators were still alive, I think they should get something. However, their families, I don't think the family should have that strong a claim on it. They should be happy. They may get something, but I don't think they should get what they're entitled to. I don't think those sort of creator rights should be handed down through generations. Kirby's kids, Ditko's kids, they didn't create these characters. Their father did. So their creative input to what made those characters is minimal, if anything at all.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see it. But like I said, I don't think it should be like, oh, well, you know, Jack Kirby, if he was still alive, should be able to go in and say, you know what, I should get half of everything from Thor and Captain America. You know,
say you had a really good idea that you wanted to bring to the market and you couldn't afford it. And I said, well, you know what, Jack, I can afford it. Why don't you sell me that idea for $10,000? So you need the money and you're like, all right, here's $10,000. So now your idea is my idea. And I end up making millions and millions of dollars out of it. And you just made the $10,000. Me as a person and being your friend, what I would do, if I made $1 million, I'd give you $100,000, you know, like, and anytime the company made a lot of money, I would definitely share the wealth with you, you know, at least 10%, probably even more. Because it was your idea. I mean, I would feel guilt, but corporations don't look at it that way. Like, they're less tied than we are. Like, we're bound by friendship.
But that's if I was still alive.
Even if you were gone, I would still, and your family needed the money, you know, I would definitely give it to them.
Well, that's where I kind of start siding with the corporation. if, like I said, these creators are still around, but I don't think their kids should be.
No, you're kind of right with that. I didn't think about that when, you know, the story first broke. I think about, you know, again, Simon and Schuster, who created Superman. They got $100 for Superman, right, and they made billions off of Superman, and they basically died penniless. And I think that's so sad that
I think that's a shame. That is absolutely a shame too. But I don't think their grandchildren should have a claim to the Superman character.
Again, you make a good point there. And I was not expecting you to say that. And I didn't even think about that, but I do feel like the corporations should give some sort of reward. Like say Stanley. Stanley was alive when they were making all of their money with the MCU. We don't know how much money they gave Stanley. But I think he deserved some of it, and he sold it too. He was the face of Marvel, and he was a nice face of Marvel too. He wasn't a jerk like Bob Kane. And that's another thing. Like when you look at Bill Finger, he died, I think, alone in his apartment.
That's about as sad a story as you get.
And then he was buried like in a pauper's grave.
You know?
It's just really sad when you think about it, that a lot of these creators, like someone that created Spider-Man or someone that created Superman or Batman, and they're seen throughout the world, everybody recognizes them, and they really didn't get anything. You know, it's kind of sad, but you make a tremendous point that their families deserve it.
I believe Jim Starlin is still alive.
Yeah.
Was it Starlin created Thanos or somebody else? Well, he's really the guy who built up Thanos and stuff. And I think he should get some sort of residual for all the money they've made from Infinity War and Endgame. I do think he should get something. 'Cause like I said, he worked on this for Marvel. He's still around. I think he should get some of the benefit from it. But like I said, it's when it starts going to the children and the grandchildren, that's where I have a little bit of a problem with, you know?
Well, there has been a precedent too, where again, Simon and Schuster, their families had sued because Superman's rights were, I think, about to go into the public domain or something like that. They ended up losing in court. And so did Kirby. You know, they basically said that he was a work for hire for Marvel and that he was not entitled to the ownership rights of his characters. And I think that that's basically going to happen again. But I think that what caused all this was the stuff that went on with Scarlett Johansson, that Disney was like, what else do we have to worry about? You know, Star Wars, Marvel, DC, anything that we bought recently, is there anything that we might have a problem with in the future, you know, that we might owe money to? Although I think that was it Kirby's family, they filed again in August.
Each of the families have filed numerous times. Simon and Schuster family, they have fought several times. Kirby's family has gone through it. Ditko's family, I think, comes up nearly every time there's a movie released because, you know, the comics and stuff, the comics, the characters make money in comics and merchandising, but nothing like the money that has just exploded as a result of the MCU and actually the characters being in these billion-dollar movies. It just kind of upped the ante on everything, I think.
Well, that was the whole thing, too. Now, that you make another good point, because without the MCU, these characters wouldn't be as popular. I mean, Marvel was filing for bankruptcy That's why they sold all of their properties.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like say the MCU didn't take off, would these these families still be wanting the ownership rights to these characters? Because
I think they would. But it would just be on such a much smaller scale.
Or it might be for sentimental reasons.
No, you see, that's where I'm cynical. I don't think any of this is sentimental. I think this is money. I mean, because Kirby's family, I'm sure, has plenty of Kirby artwork and stuff like that to satiate any sort of sentimentality. But it's, like I said, I think it's all this money floating around.
I don't know. I think if my father created Spider-Man, there'd be part of me that would like, well, I want it to have our name, you know, behind Spider-Man, and want everybody to know that it was my dad that created it. And I want it to live like the Hogarty name to live on.
Well, that's why... and that's good. Like, that's how, remember how all the Marvel comics used to be like Stan Lee Presents?
Mm.
Well, eventually they started giving, you know, Spider-Man created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. They started giving Ditko credit, you know, because even though Stan Lee was, you know, the face, Ditko was the guy behind the pencil.
Yeah.
And it was nice when they started, you started seeing his name going up right next to Stan Lee as Spider-Man created by, instead of Stan Lee Presents, it's Spider-Man created by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. So I'm all for, you know, putting the names, you know, Fantastic Four created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Absolutely. Put that byline right there. You know, that's the sentimentality side of it. You know, because like you said, Hogarty Inc., you know, you want to see your dad's name next to whatever he made.
Yeah.
Which is nice, which is sentimental and everything, but I don't think you should get a cut of...
What?
I don't.
I needs to get paid.
No, you don't. Your dad got paid. Your dad got paid and sent you to college. And
I know. And I'm just saying that there's a sentimental side of me, but, you know, there's the...
But then you're watching, you know, Hogarty Man, you know, part two, you know.
No, Spider-Man. I told you, he created Spider-Man. Hogarty Man. That would never... I'm just saying if he did...
No, I get what you're saying. The sentimental side, if they were suing and saying, you know what, we want my dad's name attached to these characters the same way Stan Lee was attached. 100% with that.
I mean, I'm just kidding about saying I want to get paid, but, you know.
Well, this is what they're saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, you know what? You made $1 billion off of a character that my dad created, or my grandfather created 50 years ago. You know, I want to get paid. It's like,
I guess it's kind of like, you know, like say like somebody built a house like back in the 1900s, and, you know, he lived in the house and then he sold it to somebody, and then the real estate went up in value. Like, his heirs don't have claim to that house anymore.
A good analogy.
Yep. So I guess we'll end it there. We got along pretty well today.
Yeah, without a referee.
Shocking.
And we didn't even have 100% of the rant.
That's true.
With zero sweetness. But still, I miss her.
Yeah, no, I miss her too. Okay, so Jack, where can people find you?
You can always send me an email at jackm@wdwnt.com.
And if you want, you can send me an email at joe@wdwnt.com, or send me a friend request on Facebook. And check out Walt Disney World News Today, Disneyland News Today, as well as Universal Parks News Today for all your Disney Universal news. And please visit the Carousel of Products, where there's a ton of fun WDWNT merchandise on sale. And
you want Nerd Alert stuff.
Yeah. And finally, if you like our show and enjoy other WDWNT podcasts and like to become a Patreon supporter, please visit the WDWNT Patreon page at www.patreon.com/WDWNT.
And tell them you only know about it because you've listened to Nerd Alert.
We're the heirs of WDWNT.
We're the heirs of WDWNT. I got to get paid.
So with that, this will be the end of WDWNT Nerd Alert Season 7, Episode 36. Till next time, see ya.
Good night, all, and be good to each other.